You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of March. A loss at home to the Boston Celtics, an undermanned Boston Celtics. What went wrong down the stretch? What can we learn from the game? And we'll break all of that down. Look at the playoff position, and it's a Facebook Live. We'll take your questions as well. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks for tuning in today. Tough loss last night for the Utah Jazz. This is your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, look behind the curtains, and some geeky numbers as well for you. Glad to have you if you're on the live programming on Facebook, as we do that every Thursday. Today's Thursday edition brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group. Today's show also brought to you by The Advocates and Mizuma USA. All right, we'll break this down from last night as much as we can, try to figure out what went wrong late in the game, all that. Let's look at the playoff picture here quickly. Impact on last night. Utah, a 72% win possibility last night against Boston, even before the injuries, and they lose that one. So the Jazz had six of those in this stretch. They're now 4-1 on those. The Clippers had a lower win possibility last night on a back-to-back on the road at 68%. They win. Portland actually lost to Memphis last night on a 61% win possibility, and then an 87% win possibility last night for Minnesota, and they beat Atlanta. So the Portland and the Utah losses were the surprise. Portland still got a bunch more of those games, and the Clippers kind of getting done what they have to. So it's going, this race just tightened up. That's a tough loss for the Jazz last night. I still think you try to get to 47. That feels pretty daunting at this point. That means 5-2 the rest of the way. Grizzlies at Minnesota, Lakers at home, Clippers at home, Lakers on the road, Golden State at home, and then the Blazers on the road. And so we'll see, but last night opens up the door to the Clippers a little bit in the playoff push, and this is why I just have not, and I'm not trying to act like I'm right on this. I just have been completely unwilling to talk about the playoffs yet, and just feeling as though the Jazz aren't in, and that's how slim the margin is. The Clippers are still back two in the loss column, so if the Jazz win that game on April 5th, I mean, it's a pretty that's a huge game. That's a commanding game if the Jazz can get it, but the Clippers schedule the rest of the way. Denver's in a little bit of trouble. I think we've discussed that. You know, we need two teams to fall out. The Clippers will play, day off they'll play Portland at Portland, though Dame didn't play the other last night. And then they've got, so the Portland's got two tough games, at Portland and at Utah. Their other five, they all have a 68% or higher win probability. Now, they're against good teams. And in theory, you're not going to go 5-0 with a 68% win probability. But who knows? Pacers, Spurs, Nuggets. Need the Nuggets to still be in it by then. Pelicans, Lakers. If the Clips go 5-2 the rest of the way, they end up at just 44 wins. If they beat the Jazz, they get to 45, and then the Jazz have a hard time. And then the Jazz do have the tiebreaker on the conference record, and I think we'd be split 2-2 at that point. So the Jazz might be all right, but depending what happens on who else sneaks into that tiebreaker, it gets a little tricky. So who knows what happens and how this plays. It makes it a little nerve-wracking. Last night, I think we're probably still all right, but it does, I think everyone would agree, last night's loss makes it a little nerve-wracking. Let's talk about that last night. A lot of focus wants to be late in the game, and should be. A lot of times I'll tell you I think the focus should be somewhere else. This time I will actually tell you that the focus should be late in game. Last night, that the one thing, by the way, one note, conference record, the Jazz are now 28-17. Denver is 24-23, and the Clippers are 23-23. So if that tiebreaker pushes to the Jazz to conference record, the Jazz are okay. If the Clippers are in the tiebreaker with the Nuggets, if it goes to divisional record, so it's just the Jazz and Denver, then the Jazz are 6-8 and Denver 6-6. So this is where all those tiebreakers are crazy. But if you get into a multiple-team tiebreaker and you tie and it goes to conference, the Jazz are right at 28-17. I wanted to make sure I clarified that. So late in the game last night was just not good. I mean, there's not a lot of analysis other than, and I'm going to break it down, but what really happens last night is that the Jazz defense doesn't get to do what it does well because the offense fails it. So the Jazz lead the game 89-84 with 4:48 left when Mitchell is scored. The Jazz have scored on three straight possessions here. I think it was as Mitchell drives a layup, he hits Crowder on a cutback layup, and the Jazz are, and now the Jazz are up 94-88 with 2:25 left as Crowder hits on a layup on a beautiful play. And the thing that bothers me first here is with 2:52 left, Mitchell hits a layup. Terry Rozier just goes right down the floor and scores 9 seconds later. Like, that's the authority by which Boston was playing with. And, you know, the Jazz are up 6 with 2:52 left, and Kevin Pelton tells me that there's no big differential between 6 and 7 on some of these. I guess he's right. I just don't agree. It feels to me so much more that if you're up by 7, it makes a huge, huge difference. And, you know, what happens on this play is the Jazz, a beautiful layup by Donovan. They're up by 6. There's 2:46 left. Boston runs it down the Jazz throat. Rubio makes a great play, cuts off Brown. Brown circles out. Rozier's the last man down. Donovan's on his side. Donovan just doesn't. Donovan kind of get bumps into Tatum. He's just not ready to guard him. They're both up the court, but Rozier just comes blitzing down, goes right down the middle of the lane, and lays it up and in. And gets by, frankly, incredible play. Gobert's a bit flat-footed and goes by him on the left side of the rim. But Donovan, just on film, I don't know what, other than Boston pushed it up after Donovan made the layup, and I don't know, after Crowder made the layup, and I don't know if Donovan fell to the ground or, but he's ahead of Rozier and just lets him kind of, is on his side. It's bad. Like, it's bad. Like, there's nothing else to say about it. And I'm not trying to, I don't know why it happened or what took place there that caused that to happen. Then the next one, Crowder gets a layup, and then they go down and they get Monroe, gets a hook shot over Rudy, so they make a play. And then this is where it really falls apart. So it's 94-90. Donovan's beat them on a few plays in a row, so they make an adjustment, and I posted this up on Locked On Sports on Twitter. And they bring Shane Larkin up, and basically a really interesting play by Brad Stevens, and basically have Monroe stand in the middle of the lane in a one-man zone. He's basically guarding Rubio, but he's not. So Donovan does the right thing and moves it to Rubio, and Rubio just short arms a 15-footer. Like, if he makes that shot at 96-90, we're in pretty good shape. He just missed it. He makes that shot 45% of the time. He just missed it. Now, on the next play, the Jazz do a nice job, but they screw up a switch, so Gobert has to go out and alter Tatum's three from the right side. And now, when the Jazz have had Crowder and Ingles in with Donovan and Rubio, the rebounding's not great. They're small, too, so a lot of this is just somewhat, you know, fight for a rebound. Larkin gets the first rebound, misses the tip-in. Monroe gets the next one after that and ends up getting fouled by Donovan on the play. And so they end up getting, you know, they end up getting 2 points where the Jazz don't clear the board. And I think that's the bummer. The Jazz got confused when both Crowder and Mitchell double-teamed. So Gobert has to go out. Now, again, I'm not trying to pick on guys, but this is just the urgency of a playoff push. So Ingles is to the left of the basket on this first one. Rubio's come in. Donovan's kind of somewhat come in. Crowder's still outside the three-point line. He doesn't come in at all for the rebound. Larkin just flies above Ingles and Rubio. He's just a more vertical player, but nobody puts a body on Larkin. Guys don't screen out a great deal. He misses the tip. Now we're doing it again. Crowder's still at the dotted line. Donovan's on the outside of Monroe having no real impact. Ingles on the left side. The ball's not there. So suddenly Rubio and Monroe are battling for a rebound, and we're going to lose that battle. Donovan fouls Mitchell on the next play. So he makes both free throws. Now it's 94-92. Donovan brings it up. Again, they've now Quinn adjusts, and I showed this up on Locked On Sports on Twitter. Quinn adjusts, and they move Rubio to the right corner because of the fact that they had done that play with Monroe. So now we have Monroe back in the pick and roll. Donovan gets it. He decides to go to the right side. Decent pick by Gobert. Donovan just goes too deep. And this is where we have to remember, Donovan's unbelievable and great. A lot of this is new. Closing games, first time, late game, running pick and rolls. And they suffocate the defense in on him. Jaylen Brown comes off. Rubio steals it. Donovan goes too deep. You're watching this replay. As I watch this play tonight, there's nowhere for him to go. I mean, there is literally nowhere for him. He comes off this thing, and he's got to retreat out of that. Only six on the shot clock, so it's getting tight, but there is no place for him to go. They have guarded this well. Gobert's route is right next to Donovan. They've worked very hard on Rudy rolling wider. And I don't know if on that play he's supposed to roll wider, but he rolls right into Donovan. So I think his roll is supposed to be a good deal wider. And frankly, if he rolls a good deal wider, then he suddenly got Larkin on his hip, and that makes a big difference. And so, again, these are just probably little execution things late in the game. Rudy, I thought, gave the 11 minutes of the game, I thought Rudy gave the highest level of effort that I've maybe ever seen out of him last night. I thought he was incredible in the opening 11 minutes of the game. So on this one, I do think, you know, Rudy sets the pick and then rolls right with Donovan. I mean, he's still very attached to him. Probably need to roll a little wider. If he rolls wider and Donovan retreats out, Ingles probably gets a three, wide open three. And if Donovan could have seen the passing window to Joe, he's pretty open. And it would have been a chance for Joe to knock down a clutch three. Those haven't fallen a great deal since the overtime game in Detroit. But instead, Donovan turns it over, and now here's the bummers. The defense doesn't have an impact as Tatum goes the other way for a fast break, and it's tied at 94. On the final offensive play for the Jazz, or actually the Jazz have two final offensive plays where they don't convert. And the bummer to me here is just how good we are defensively. That's how we're going to win games. We're only an average offensive team. And so instead, when we're making these mistakes, that turnover, not getting back on Rozier, mixing the switch defensively so that Gobert goes out, we're never letting our defense have the impact on the game that it needs to late. On the last one, they basically kind of went into a 2-3 zone, and Donovan drives in the middle of it and puts up a really tough 10-foot floater that it's just not a great shot. But I don't know if he read what was taking place, or frankly, you know, what was supposed to happen. No pick got set. This was the one play, frankly, that I thought, and ironically probably the closest to scoring, that I thought was really just kind of botched, and I'm not sure what was supposed to happen correctly out of that. But that was out of the timeout, and they brought Baines in for Monroe, and they suddenly went to a zone. Pretty creative on that. Jazz then didn't get much out of their final possession with 20 seconds left. So the offense just didn't make the plays. Boston had some neat adjustments in there, and the Jazz just didn't get it done. And then the bummer to me is that when the Jazz didn't get it done, the defense didn't get a chance to put its clamps down. And that is the killer. We're going to win games defensively, not offensively. Final play was well run. Ingles stepped over to help Rubio on the Larkin drive and then ran into Rubio, so he couldn't get back out to Brown. Olajay flipped out. Rudy suddenly had to guard both those guys. Brown buried a three with 0.3 seconds left. Big shot. But again, the bummer for me is that in the final 2:11, that's the one possession where we made them run offense. The other time, actually, they ran offense, they got nothing. You know, the Jazz, the one other time when Donovan misses that floater, Rozier misses a 27-footer on a possession where the Jazz defense clamped down. The Jazz had a chance and got to play a little defense there in that setting. So You know, if you start to kind of look at the final 4 minutes defensively, Rozier misses a 27-footer, Tatum misses a drive. But then you get these, they really score on two of about six half-court possessions, and they get a bunch of other easy ones. That's the killer. Tough loss, though. Great game and a tribute to both sides in just kind of the way they play, well-coached, fun to watch in that sense, and a great tribute to Boston. I mean, to be missing that many guys, still play their game. They discombobulated the Jazz dramatically. I'll talk about that and then get to your questions. Today's show is brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group, Rob Taylor and the crew. It's a good story. Rob's out in Pleasant Grove, and Rob was going through the car buying experience, didn't really enjoy it, particularly on the nearly new or used car end of things, and decided there's got to be a better way for me to do this. And so what he did do is exactly that. He went and got Brady Kimball, who was a longtime mechanic, and said, we're going to open a car dealership. And Brady had been a mechanic technician for 25 years. And so what they have been able to do is combine 80 years of combined automotive business experience, have a technician who's your buyer. So they're a lean company, fewer employees. You basically make it easier, simpler, get it going. Go look at all the reviews of Shamrock Auto. They're incredible. You can reach Rob at 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. Out the door pricing in 5 minutes. Test drive by yourself. Buying experience in under an hour. Full service, can do financing in-house, extended warranties, value driven Carfax report on every fact. You read the reviews, you'll see what Rob makes sure that you have this fabulous experience, and you can talk some Jazz with them. 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. 801-319-2250. Today's show is also brought to you by Mazuma USA. I appreciate everybody who's using Mazuma. I got word back that it's going well and that the people are calling in. Mazuma USA is a really interesting company. Basically, we're all sitting around this time of year and doing our taxes, and it's an ugly, ugly experience. So what's the answer on this? The answer is MazumaUSA.com. If you have 1 to 5 employees, Mazuma will help you out. If you're not using them, you're losing money and you're losing clarity. For $75 a month, you get unlimited consultation from a CPA and a bookkeeper. You get all your reports, personal and business tax returns. It's really remarkable. Let me just lay it out for you. You sign up. You have an orientation call with your bookkeeper and your CPA that are assigned to you. They get all your information. They immediately get you your first set of reports. Then they have a tax planning discussion with you. Then every month you get a report. Every quarter you get tax planning call. And at the end of the year, you have all your tax returns. Everything's taken care of for you. No contract, cancellation anytime, no hidden fees. Use the promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, LOCKED, and you get 25% off. Call 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102. MazumaUSA.com. All right, I want to get to the questions really, really badly. I do want to mention a few other things on that game. Zone defense by Boston at the end of the third put the Jazz in a position where they went 1 of 7 from the field and really, really struggled in that. I thought that was interesting. Rozier hits 3 straight 3s. First one's on Donovan on the left side. Next two are on Dante. Not sure whether I know enough to know if Dante's fault. He opened up a little bit on the pick and roll and didn't stay attached. I think the defense was to stay connected. That's always been a Dante weakness, is that he'll channel without staying connected, and he needed to stay connected there. And then Rozier goes off and hits the two. I thought it was interesting how much Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum went at Donovan defensively. He's only 6'3", and I thought that showed last night. And I thought that Boston wanted Ricky Rubio to take an awful lot of shots and got him to take 11 in the first half. Jazz adjusted a little bit there from there, but it was clear that they were going to – a team that doesn't allow a lot of threes was going to give up some threes last night, frankly, to allow Rick and let Ricky Rubio shoot. The Jazz missed their first 12 above the break threes last night. A weird circumstance. Boston's the number one defensive team in the league on above the break. Supposedly that's not something you can really defend, and the variance comes back, but the Jazz missed their first 12 last night and struggled most of the night on those, and that is now becoming an issue. The Jazz were 3 of 22 last night on Above the Break threes. And if we go back to the Portland Trailblazer game on the 23rd, the Jazz, since the All-Star break, on Above the Break three-pointers, are shooting below 30%. And are scuffling at, actually, I guess at about 31% now is the number. I just ran the update, or I made a slight mistake on something. Nope. The Jazz are, since that Portland game on the, is that right? It says are at 31% on Above the Break threes. Oh, that's because against Golden State, we went 10 of 20 to bring that number up after a little bit of a hot streak. The other one that's interesting on Donovan, by the way, is there's been a complete change in his shot selections. He was taking 3.6 threes early in the year as off-the-bounce threes. He's now up to about 5.5, so he's taking an extra 2 threes a game as an off-the-bounce three. He shoots below 30% on off-the-bounce three. He shoots over 40% on a catch-and-shoot three. So as we've, you know, increased his load, there's some impact there. And then if you take it over about the last 15 games, the off-the-bounce three for Donovan is even a lower percentage shot as either, you know, that's a hard shot, particularly for rookies. Traditionally, rookies, that's the shot they don't make. Donovan is 40% catch and shoot, 29.7 on off the bounce. Since All-Star break, since the last 15 games, he's 25% on off the bounce threes, taking 5 of them a game. For the season, his average on that is 4. And if you go back and look at December, for example, he was at 3.5. And if you look at November, he was at the same 3.5. And November, that wasn't a strength. And then he added it for a while and got it going a tiny bit. But that's not a great shot for him. And he's taking it an awful lot right now and not at a particularly high level, now taking them at 5 a game. He knows his mid-range off-the-bounce three is not great. He talked about it in an interview the other day. All right, those were kind of my big thoughts. Let's go to your questions. Appreciate everybody jumping in. We'll take a few here. Matt Moon wants to know if I can introduce him to Joe Ingles. Of course he does. Are we in trouble? I don't know that we're in trouble. I mean, we're in a playoff push, and it's going to be tight, and you got to win games. But that, I anyone along the way who thought we were in the playoffs, I just disagreed with dramatically. Every time I go do Jake's show or do someone's show and they want to talk about playoff matchups, I won't do it. I've never thought we were in. I haven't. So maybe, I guess, are we in a tight playoff battle? We're in as tight a battle as we've said the whole time. I thought it would take 47 wins. I'm now hoping it's going to take 46. Trade this year's draft picker for a veteran or keep it? Boy, Michael, really? Right now? There's too much to that, Michael. It depends who you're getting for your draft pick. You know, is it somebody with probably we're at a multi-year contract stage, I would say. I'm not sure we're doing a George Hill 1 year for a first-round draft pick. So we decided not to trade our draft pick for Nikola Mirotic. We already made that decision, which probably was the right decision. Mirotic shot 39% in New Orleans and 28% from three. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But it seems like that has turned out okay to not make the decisions. We've already decided once to not trade that pick. So I would be surprised if we suddenly did. But if you suddenly have somebody for 2 years left on their deal and you really like them and think they're the right fit, and then maybe that's they are. I'm glad you're thinking ahead. I'm pretty worried about the next 7 games. Jay Miller, curious about Donovan's efficiency in isolation sets. Well, I have a program that will tell me to some extent, and I can also look up on Synergy on what percentage is in. I actually subscribe to Cleaning the Glass, Ben Falk's site, which is great. I just haven't figured out how to use it well enough. So that's really my bigger problem. I'm sure he has that to some extent, but we'll look up Donovan in ISO. Give me a second. All right, so Donovan Mitchell isolation is an average isolation player. 47th percentile of the league. He shoots 36.2%. He is a great spot-up shooter, by the way. That is kind of my big thing on him. And we'll start using him more and more in catch and shoot. This is where he probably needs other players to play off of over time. That's where he's at his best. He's in the 93rd percentile in catch and shoot in this league. 52nd percentile in pick and roll ball handler, which is great as a rookie. 49% in isolation. Any tendencies on isolation drives? He goes left 63% of the time, right 37% of the time. If he goes right, he's better by a little bit, and I'm sure that's because defenses are forcing him that direction. So for a rookie, he's probably fine. How many times have you seen a team go to a zone in a game and have it be successful? I haven't seen anybody play zone all year. That was the only time I've seen anybody play zone all year long. I thought Atlanta loss was bad. Last night took it to another level. Really? Why? Like, Atlanta loss was bad. That team on the floor last night, Terry Rozier is a 14th pick of a draft. Jason Tatum's a third pick of a draft. Jaylen Brown's a third pick of a draft. Greg Monroe was a seventh pick of a draft. I would disagree pretty wholeheartedly. The Atlanta loss was a good coach who understood our system, was comfortable playing us and got us, and we'd been really, really good for a long time. Boston last night was a lot of really good players on the number two team in the East. It's pretty damn loaded. That's dealing with some injuries, and they were good last night. But I wouldn't put those in the same box at all. Crystal wants to know, what was the malfunction last night? Something seemed off. It was interesting last night. I made the comment last night during the broadcast that I never felt engaged in the game as the announcer. On a solo broadcast without Ron, usually I'm really in the game, feel it. Never felt that last night. So maybe that's what the team felt. But I think that's just Boston dictated the game, had us out of our systems, was very physical defensively. We had to fight through that. They got the shots to go into different places than we wanted. A little bit on Donovan, by the way. Donovan's got to force shots right now because teams aren't giving him anything. And so if he doesn't force shots, he doesn't get shots. And I think we got to be aware of that so that every shot he's getting is awfully hard right now. And really quite difficult for him to get any type of look at. And that's part of the difficulty. Our team's taking us out of Ingles' favors, pick and roll. It didn't seem like we were running it as often. Would have loved to see it during the game last night. I don't know. I mean, Quinn's adjusted the rotation to try to get those two on the floor together with that second unit. I wonder if maybe I don't know this. This was a quick thought, no facts behind this. I wonder if Dante's presence in that lineup is eliminating that. Not to his negative, but just that he's on the floor, and so there's other things going on there where that second unit was Joe Ingles, Derek Favors, Jay Crowder, Jonas Jerebko, and whomever else, and now it's Dante. And Dante is pushing the tempo and using a tremendous amount of, impact on possessions. Dante's first stint was tough. His second stint was much better. And Quinn made an adjustment in rotation. They opened the fourth. We went with Rubio, Ingles, Favors, O'Neal, and Crowder. That group went on a 5-0 run and was plus four. And then when Dante came back in, Favors went out. I don't know. But I think that might be the impact. The only Favors and Ingles played together without Gobert, which is when you then use Favors in the pick and roll, for a grand total of about 3 minutes in the second half. They were plus four, and they played that same grouping for about three and a half minutes in the second quarter. They were minus one. That was with Dante as well, though. And that was a tough stretch. Dante was just way too fast. Might have been better. That could have been first quarter, but so I don't know. That is our best pick and roll combination. And do I have the capability to find out if it ran at all? I mean, they had one incredible play last night. Absolutely incredible play last night on a bounce pass. Let me see if I can just do one date and see. Oh, wait. Let's see. I can select a game, I think. Never done this before. Team. All right, this is really bad podcasting right here. Let's try this. See if I get last night's game. Last night's game. I don't get a lot of, and we ran, it doesn't come up great. It looks like we ran 25 Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert pick and rolls last night. And I don't have any other specifics. We ran a lot of Joe Ingles pick and rolls early that didn't necessarily roll early in the game. We couldn't find Rudy on the roll. We promptly did right after I said we wouldn't be able to find him at all. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Advocates. Really good work by Matt and the crew over at the Advocates. If the time comes where, unfortunately, you need the Advocates, you've been in a car accident, you need some help, you need someone to help you out, then that's what the Advocates are there for. Matt's been doing this for 25 years. The way it works, you call the Advocates, 801-355-5550, and an attorney will call you within 24 hours. Excuse me, within 24 hours. How about within 60 seconds? Then, in the next 24 hours, your case gets put into their system. And once it's into the system, it's going through the incredible 106-step process that Matt and the people at the Advocates have put together and built for you. They're there to help you. They're there to get you good results. They're there to make sure nothing bad happens to you. They're there to make sure you're treated well. Auto accidents are all very different, but the process is the very same because less than 1% go to trial and only 3% go to arbitration. So you call the lawyer and within 60 seconds, you get a call back. Then you're in that, within the day, you're in the system and boom, your case goes into it. The special teams people are working along the way for the various different process. That efficiency means productivity, means communication, means expediting the process, and they're experts at the task inside the process. 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. I think our feed has been questionable. My wife said that the internet in the house was not great today. So let's go back to the questions. Can you explain why we didn't go for 2-for-1 in the last possession if Quinn indeed was trying to call for 2-for-1, the players couldn't? I don't know. It was a viable 2-for-1 possibility, though. So there. I don't have an answer on that. When you did the interview with Arnovitz a couple weeks back on Locked On NBA, by the way, the scout on Locked On NBA today is terrific. He suggested no draft at all, just a thought exercise. But who wouldn't have ended up with the Jazz? I'm not Dustin. I'm not following this. Seems that we would have gone all in to bring in Donovan Rudy regardless if there was a draft or not. But somebody else could have too. Yeah, I don't know. If we got those. It's not a feasible answer unless you open up the salary cap and don't have max salaries. That would be the only way to make that work. I'm way too close to the camera right now. Do you think is right if Rubio takes more shots than Rudy and Faves combined? Well, I mean, I think that the other guys are good too. Right? So that's by design. That's what they want. That's what they did to us last night. They took away the role guy. They dropped the big back on the pick and roll with Rubio, dropped the big into both the lap of Gobert and had the guard drop into it. So Rubio's open. Gobert doesn't, in favors, don't get shots, and Rubio does. So, I mean, It's you can't just pick that. Like, Rudy's not popping a 19 and suddenly taking Jays. Like, we don't want that. 47 wins is the magic number. Where do you see us getting the 5 wins? It seems like it's going to be tough. Not impossible, but tough. It is going to be tough. I thought it was going to be tough even with Boston. No, it's going to be tough. I mean, we better start hoping for 46 here and that a few things go. We're going to have to win that Clippers game. April 5th, we have to win. Denver has to keep losing. That's, you know, that's really the way to watch this. Jeremy Haas, I think Quinn got out-coached last night. I think that's a really weird comment. I thought Brad Stevens coached a great game last night. Does that mean Quinn got out-coached? Or does it just mean that Brad Stevens coached a great game? Because really, that's the way I would say it. I would say Brad Stevens did a bunch of things last night that coached a great game. I documented for you on Twitter at Locked On Sports some of the adjustments that Quinn made in answers and then plays didn't work. So sure, I guess, but I don't. That's not necessarily how I would phrase it. I thought Brad Stevens had a great game. Talking to two people in the league today, they said that's Brad's ideal situation. No Kyrie, no Al Horford, no Marcus Morris. Brad can just do all of his little tricks, and that's probably when he's at his best. Can we chalk this up to miss or make? Boston made threes and we didn't. Maybe. I mean, they were 12-21, and we were 9-23. I thought they outplayed us. And then I still thought we had a chance to win, right? I thought they, as I said earlier, I didn't feel connected to the game. I didn't feel like the game had our flow to it, and our system, and our blender, and all that kind of stuff going. So I never felt like we were ourselves last night. So I would credit that to them, but they definitely did make some shots. There's no doubt on that. Our defense wasn't as great last night. I miss Tabo. Been thinking about his connection to the team and the comparison to his replacement now, Royce O'Neal. Do players like that look to thank Tabo as a path? I mean, nobody thanks somebody for getting hurt. Is that what you're asking? No. I think we have to expect that by giving Donovan the ball at the end of games, not with a ton of experience, we'll see some ups and downs. I think that's very true. Alex, I don't think I agreed with you last time. That one I think is totally true. You just don't see it. I mean, next win, Donovan's won more games than just about any rookie as the leading scorer since Carmelo Anthony, David Robinson. Like, that's it. So that, I mean, nobody's doing what Donovan's doing. Nobody's done it. Like, Donovan's groundbreaking. Clutch defensive rebounding seems to be Utah's Achilles heel. Yes, in the last two games, that's been bad. Why can't we seem to secure the defensive boards when it matters most at the end of games? I wonder if there's a stat last 5 minutes during. I mean, I can pull it. I mean, I went through it earlier on the show of what happened on that rebound. You have Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio, Jay Crowder wasn't involved in it, and Donovan Mitchell. Donovan was kind of pushed up. And Greg Monroe is 7 feet tall or 6'11", and none of our guys are vertically very skilled. I think that I'd be curious to look at the numbers. My instinct is that Jay Crowder and Joe Ingles are below average or average rebounders and what their defensive rebounding rate is. Maybe Joe's been active enough this year, grabbing 6 a game, that he's now above average. But no, it's a tough situation that when Rudy gets pulled away from the basket to block a shot or to do something, we don't have great rebounders. And that's absolutely been an Achilles heel. It cost us the San Antonio game maybe and was impactful last night. If both teams shoot the average from 3, Jazz win going away, wouldn't say it's entirely Stevens out coaching Quinn, just didn't hit open shots. I would agree with that. I would say there's just this funny thing that Boston is the number one team in the league on above the break threes, and we have not been very good on them. So last night didn't stun me. It was a little more than I thought, but that wouldn't be coaching. That would just, I mean, 3 of 22, that's our worst shooting up. We've had a few of these recently. I mean, Sacramento, we were 3 of 19. Atlanta, we were 4 of 21. Boston, we were 3 of 22. Orlando, 5 of 18. Indiana, 5 of 23. We just didn't notice it because we were winning. Houston, we went 4 of 25. And by the way, the other one late in games, without being too critical of our group, we don't have guys with like the greatest clutch track record. If you're going late in the game and trying to give someone the ball, and we're giving it to Donovan, who's learning on the fly, we don't have guys who have like the greatest late game track record of clutchness. You know, I don't know how many shots Joe Ingles took in the clutch last year. I mean, really. He hasn't been superb this year. I think he's about 33% from the field. I mean, clutch numbers are always a lot lower. Don't compare him to regular numbers. But this is, like, I don't think Joe's done this before. I mean, that was Gordon and George Hill last year. I mean, last year, Joe, to his credit, had 16 shot attempts. He made 10 of them last year in the clutch. Pretty awesome. 7 of 13 from 3. This year, he's 9 of 28, 8 of 23 from 3 in the clutch. Different role, though, right? Last year, he's playing off three guys. That's pretty awesome what he did last year. I didn't have that in my notes, or didn't remember it. I'm sure I have it in my notes somewhere. But that's a true. That's great. Ricky Rubio, who's got a lot of clutch experience, but as a point guard with some loaded offensive teams, is had a very good clutch year this year. In the final 5 minutes of a close game, this year he's 50% from the field and 5 of 9 from three. Coming in for his career, he was 30%. He was 31 last year, 27 the year before, 31 the year before that, 26 the year before that, 28 the year before that. He's been great for us. 10 of 20. Five. So we don't have a lot of, that's not a great strength in this roster, is a bunch of guys late in games where you can go make plays offensively. If that, you know, Jay Crowder last year in Boston with 36%. 5 of 23 from 3 in the clutch. This year, he's been great for us. He's 6 of 9 for us. He was 4 of 6 for Cleveland. He's 10 of 15 and 2 of 4 from 3. The year before in Boston, he was pretty darn good. He was 53% and 10 of 24 in the clutch. Clutch numbers are weird. He's probably got the most experience. All right, we're at 41 minutes, which probably means we should wrap this up. Let me see if there's any other questions. You guys, some of you guys going back and forth. Alan Horton of the Timberwolves calling me. I am just finishing my Locked On Jazz. I will call you back in 1 minute, all right? See ya. There's Alan Horton of the Timberwolves. All right, you guys are all going back and forth in a great discussion, which I love. Aja Lee Murray. Great barber in town. Is that a woman a barber? Do you think it would be good for Donovan's experience-wise to make the playoffs, or do you think the rest of would do him good? No, it'd be great for him to make the playoffs. But I think this is great, actually. I think this whole experience last night's great for him. Everything he's experiencing is great. To go through this, have the team turned over to him. I mean, if you look at our clutch numbers, this is really incredible. I'll leave you guys with this note. Final 5 minutes of a close game this year. Donovan Mitchell has taken 84 shots. Joe Ingles has taken 26. I mean, we have just turned this over to him every night. It's awesome. What an incredible experience for him to try to figure that out. That is Locked On Jazz today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate it. Ashley, I owe you a call on the possibility of being the official barber of Locked On on Locked On Jazz. Appreciate that. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. This needs some help. Got to make me look better for Facebook Live. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.